Good evening, everyone. It's time to take charge of your life. Hello, this is marriage and family therapist Eleanor Barbaro, your host, inviting you to take charge of your life on WDIY. The theme of this program is that so many events in life happen to us over which we have no control. Our only control is our response to life's situations. It is often said that 90% of life's events happen to us, and 10% is what we make happen. Tonight, we talk about raising children by tapping into our own common sense, particularly from a dad's point of view. In this way, we honor all dads on Father's Day. My guest this evening is Richard Greenberg, author of Raising Children That Other People Like to Be Around. He is married to his childhood sweetheart, Joanne, and they are the parents of three grown sons and a daughter in college. In his book, Raising Children That Other People Like to Be Around, Richard gives parents an overview of the process of using common sense while offering guidelines to reduce conflict between parents and kids, improve communication within the family, and replace the stress of parenting with true common sense. Teaching children respect means showing respect for ourselves as parents. It is a pleasure to welcome Richard Greenberg to help us to take charge of our lives. Welcome, Richard Greenberg.
Well, thank you very much, Ellie. It's great to be here.
Well, I'm so glad that you wrote this book, Richard. I'm only sorry that you didn't write it earlier when I was raising my own kids. Many years ago, I relied upon Dr. Spock, but I would have relied upon you. How did you come to write this book?
Well, you know, Joanne and I had started having a family or building our family, and we would go out and we would see children who were misbehaved and just back-talking their parents. And I said to Joanne, how can these parents allow these children to behave like that? And, you know, don't they get it? And she said to me, I think they just don't know what to do. I think there's just no instruction manual for having children. And so because I was sort of a mechanical guy who assembled a lot of toys for my children, I had the instruction manual template in my head, and I decided I would try and write an instruction manual for having children. And then as that came out, it evolved into the book that I've written that is basically, I think, a sort of bare-bones version of how to put your head in the right place in order to be an effective parent. So that my book is much more about what type of parent you can be than it is about how to discipline your children.
Well, I think that was that's a point very well taken. But it also shows how we as parents have to set what you call set an example.
Right.
That sometimes our children don't do the things we want them to do, and we can get upset as parents. And you point out that's not setting an example. Can you give an example from your own career as a dad and raising your own family?
Well, I think that, you know, what I've recognized is that children who stray from the example that their parents set generally come back to that example when they're older. So there is a natural period of rebellion. The only example I can give you of my own sort of failure to set a good example is that I was once coaching a Little League game, and I got very angry about something, and I rarely ever show my children my anger, or at least my frustration with the world. I try to take the world in stride. Sometimes my children, you know, you talked about the forces that we can't control. Sometimes our children just do things that are so crazy, you go, what are you thinking? But the bottom line was that I got upset, and I sort of dramatically dropped my clipboard, and I acted like a child, and I was a little upset about having done that. But, you know, all in all, my wife and I would double-team our kids so that if I did something that was particularly lame, she could go in and try and explain that, or vice versa. And we were always having each other's backs as we went through this process. But setting an example, you know, I always made a point of, like, returning the shopping cart or have them return the shopping cart. I always made a point of treating clerks kindly and not being on the phone when I was talking to people. And also, you know, picking up trash that wasn't necessarily my trash but needed to be picked up and put in a trash can. And all of those little things sort of build up in your child a set of expectations of how they should behave as an adult, because you as the parent are the person they're going to end up mimicking as they get older.
And you also talk about making rules. I'll give you an example. In my life, I was an only child, and I wanted a very big family. I really wanted six children when we started out, but I remember that when my youngest, the fourth child came along, Adam, and I remember he was about 3 months old, and I heard him crying. I went into his bedroom, and he smiled at me, and I knew then I had had it. I loved him dearly. I loved all of them. But in terms of making rules, when you have a large family, you have four children, three sons and a daughter as well.
Right.
Well, I don't know. You didn't mention in your book, but my kids had pets all over the place. I mean, we had dogs, we had cats, we had rabbits, we had everything. And we were living in the country at that time. And I remember saying, you know, I want them to have their pets. And I sat down, and my husband and I sat down, and together we made up the idea that they could have as many pets as they wanted. But however, they would have to take responsibility for the cleanup and taking care of their pets. And I said, I would purchase the food. But they were responsible for the taking care of their pets, making sure the cages were clean, walked, fed, etc. And that was the deal. And that worked very well.
Well, and we had the same deal. We had a family dog, so there were walks that had to be taken. There was food that had to be placed. And, you know, I mean, they took responsibility, but it did require what, you know, is typical parental prodding, which was like, somebody needs to clean up the backyard. And then, you know, they knew who needed to clean up the backyard. And, you know, feeding the dog was never a problem because that was relatively easy and the dog was always happy about it. Walking the dog, you know, as they started using homework as a reason not to walk the dog got fewer walks.
Right.
But the bottom line is that, you know, the rules that we had at our house and what is valuable about that rule is that that is a rule that reminds you that in life you have a responsibility and that, you know, from my point of view, the rules creation area really is derived from the example that we want to set. So that if we want to set an example of respect and we want to set an example of truth and we want to set an example of kindness, then our rules need to reflect the example we want to set. And so if you lied in my house, that was a capital offense. If you were disrespectful in our house, that was a capital offense. You know, there were very few things that got you put into purgatory or sent to your room that weren't sort of immediately behavioral. And those typically were things that were just misbehavior or too much energy or just, you know, you were behaving in a way that wasn't working out for the existing temperature of the family. And so, you know, something I learned from my mother was go to your room and when you're ready to come back, then you can come back. And in that way, if you came back and you behaved like a jerk again, then I would have to say, you know, you came back too early. You weren't ready to come back. Why don't you go back to your room and think about it some more, and then you can come back. But it kept me from having to be the cop. It kept me from having to remember that I had sent one of my kids to their room, and I had to go look in on them in 7 minutes or 10 minutes. It just was like, when you're ready, I'm giving you the responsibility to decide when you can come back.
Now, Richard Greenberg, you're talking in a very... just a very casual, very in a way that we can really respond to. Is that the way you talk to your children too? Did you ever lose your temper?
Well, of course I lost my temper. you know, I mean, I think you lose your temper. But one of the things that was interesting for me that you know, part of setting that example again is looking at the way we were raised by our parents. And in doing that, we kind of have the opportunity as the next generation to improve upon what we liked and to eliminate what we didn't like. And one of the things that I liked was that whenever my father was angry at me, you know, even if he hit me, which he did, you know, fairly regularly because that was fine in those days, he would always come in and he would explain to me why he had done it. And he would always sort of give me the respect of saying to me, do you know why I got that angry at you? Do you know what the lesson is here? And he would reinforce that lesson. And so I learned that, you know, I could use sort of a moderated position and a calm voice later if I had lost my temper. Although we didn't yell in this house. We're not big yellers.
Right.
But, you know, they knew that voice. They knew the don't mess with me voice. And children are highly sensitive to changes in your tone. And each of us as parents can adopt our own sort of Obi-Wan Kenobi voice, which means that is not acceptable behavior. And they get it. You look them in the eye, you drop to a knee, you maybe hold their arm, and you go, this is not going to be okay. Now, if they were disrespectful to my wife or me, then that was a different point of view from Dad. That really, you know, that was completely unacceptable and often led to being, you know, read to their room by their ear or some other classic parental sort of physical position, but not much spanking. I think our oldest son, who's now 34, was the subject of a spanking or two, and it sort of trickled down to his siblings that they didn't want to get Dad too angry.
And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Take Charge of Your Life. And this evening I'm talking with Richard Greenberg, author of Raising Children That Other People Like to Be Around, from a dad's point of view. 5 common sense musts from a father's point of view. And this is the way we're honoring Father's Day today. So we talked about setting an example and making. What about making the rules?
Well, making the rules is derived from the example you want to set. So if you decide in your example that you want your children to be truthful and that you want your children to be respectful, or you want your children to be grateful or generous, then I think you define your rules accordingly. If you want your child to be generous, then you say to them, you know, here's your allowance, and we're going to take 50 cents of it, and we're going to put it in this little charity box. And, you know, that's just money that we're going to give to someone else who needs it. And you create a rule that is designed to teach them that from their earnings they should put some money away for somebody who doesn't have any. So that the rule is really an implementation of the values, and the values are defined by setting the example. And I have in my book, there's a questionnaire that helps parents sort of ask each other, well, what are the things that matter to me? What do I care about? What do I want my child to be like? I mean, my parents were highly focused on my academic achievement, and I was a very, very, very good learner and curious person, but I wasn't a really good student. And that was very frustrating for me as a child, because I just thought, well, they're so focused on all the wrong things. I mean, they get angry at me that I'm not getting all A's, but they don't get angry at, but they don't praise me for the fact that I get along with everybody. I'm not a mean person. And so I sort of decided, well, I was going to focus on the character of my children, you know, rather than their academic performance or their athletic performance.
We're going to talk more with Richard Greenberg when we return to Take Charge of Your Life on WDIY.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Take Charge of Your Life. Hello, this is Eleanor Bobrow, your host. This evening we're talking about how to raise children that other people like. And my guest this evening is author Richard Greenberg, who is a native of Los Angeles. He has earned a BA in English at UCLA and married his childhood sweetheart Joanne. They are the happy parents of 3 grown sons and a daughter in college. And for 30 years, Richard worked in the entertainment industry as a post-production executive, editor, and writer-producer, and he teaches a post-production film and TV course at UCLA. And they have 3 sons, Aaron, Benjamin, and Kobe, who work in the entertainment industry. Welcome back, Richard Greenberg.
Great to be back.
We're talking about, it's wonderful to have children, but we're talking about how to make the responsibility of rearing children fun and also raising responsible children. And we were talking about making rules and applying the rules in the first part. And also, you talked about respecting yourself. What do you mean by respecting yourself as a parent and as a person?
I think that a lot of parents worry about whether their children are going to love them or not. I think a lot of parents operate from a deficit in their role as parents. And it's really self-respect is something about not doubting your ability to do the job. And if you assume that you've got a 20-year head start on this infant that you've brought into the world, then you have to understand that you're able to make decisions that the infant isn't able to make, like when it's time to go to bed. The best example I can give is if you got into a taxi and you said to the driver, take me to the airport, and the driver said to you, I don't really know how to get to the airport, then you would be a crazy person in the backseat of that cab on your way to the airport because you didn't know whether you were going to make your plane and the driver didn't know where they were going, and it would cause you great anxiety. Well, we as parents are driving the cab in which our children are riding, and if we don't know where we're going or at least act like we know where we're going, and by the way, we should because we've been in this town longer than they have for sure, then our children get anxious, and when our children get anxious, they act out. So it's important that we as parents understand that we have the ability and the obligation to lead our children and to guide them through their lives and to show them what's expected of them, because that lets them know that we know what we're doing and it makes them calm. So in that sense, I'm talking about self-respect as in confidence. And I think as parents, we need to be confident because our children sort of anchor themselves in our confidence and the way that we deal with the world.
Now you have an example of having your daughter Emily go to bed and stay in bed when she was about 2 years old. Is that right, Richard?
Yes, and the beauty of this example, I think, is that it really demonstrates that as parents, we don't always get it right. There are very few absolutes about, you know, if you do this, then your child will do that. It doesn't really happen that way. And what happened with Emily that was pretty funny was that she began to wake up in the middle of the night and sort of come toddling into our room. And we had this rule that was like we would never bring our children into our bed because it was our bed. And that was sort of me as the dad saying, no, nobody else is sleeping in this bed. This is our bed. And so, you know, we'd take her back into her room and then she'd wake up again, or it would take, you know, 45 minutes for my wife to get her back to sleep. And we're both in this sort of sleep-deprived haze. And then the next night, you know, this happens again. And then I decide I've got a brilliant idea. I'm going to put a picture of us in her room right next to her bed and say, look, Mommy and Daddy are right here. You know we're in the house. Don't worry about it. Everything will be fine. And sure enough, she came into our room, and it just became this big Megillah. And so ultimately what happened was that we kind of said, you know, I think we're paying too much attention to this. I think we're putting too much of a focus on what's going on with her and her sleep. Let's just leave it alone and see what happens. And sure enough, she sort of cured herself. She stopped coming into our room and sort of got over it. So it was one of those occasions where, as a parent, you have to decide, well, maybe the method I'm using isn't the right method, and maybe this will just resolve itself if I stop making it such a big deal. And that was one of the things that I think is important to recognize, is that, you know, we as parents have to remain flexible and have to keep evaluating the effectiveness of what it is we're doing. Sometimes that's hard, but my parents used to take a stand and then they would stay there, and it just didn't necessarily continue to make sense to me. Or they would hold me guilty of a crime I committed 5 years earlier, and it was like I was different, I had changed, I had learned that lesson. So I think as parents we have to remain open to the fact that our children can and will learn from us, and we should remain open to the idea that they can do that.
Now, in your book, you talk about the importance of truthfulness in all matters in the family, and that to give the children an opportunity to deal with very difficult things for themselves, but knowing that they have a place to go where they'll be greeted with respect and honor. And you talked about something called armistice.
Right.
Tell us about that.
That was a brilliant thing that my parents did with me, which was, if I had done something wrong and I knew I was going to get in trouble for it, the best example I can give you is as a child, I was playing in our family living room and I was throwing my little airplane around, and my airplane hit this crystal wine decanter and it shattered. And I just knew that I was going to get in trouble for that. And so when my mother got home, I said, you know, can I have an armistice? And my parents had invented this thing called an armistice, which meant that they could not, in the heat of the moment, punish me, that there would be a discussion of the crime that had been committed. And so she would go, yes, and we'll just discuss it when your father gets home. What did you do? And I would say, you know, she actually would just say, you can have the armistice. And then when he got home, I would say, okay, I was playing in the living room with my airplane. I broke the crystal thing, and I know I'm going to get in trouble for that. And they would say, well, yeah, that was really not smart. What did you do wrong? And I said, well, I was playing with my airplane in the living room. They said, exactly. So what can we do about this? What should we do about it? And I was sort of like, well, I'll take out the trash every day for the next 10 years. And they said, well, it's your job to take out the trash anyway, so there's no thing there. And I would say, well, then I'll keep my room clean. It's your job to keep your room clean. And then my mother would say something like, why don't you wash your car, your dad's car and my car this weekend? And that was like, okay. And, you know, I was probably 7 or 8 years old. It wasn't like it was a huge, painful punishment. But the process was very important because it taught me that I could tell the truth about something I had done wrong without getting spanked for it or, you know, physically punished, and that there could be a discussion through which a lesson was learned. And so, and then, as an 8-year-old kid, I'm running around using the word armistice. You know, can I have an armistice? And I must have done 15 or 20 things that were armistice worthy. And, you know, many of them involved playing with matches. And I, you know, learned lessons, and then I explained what that was, and I didn't do the same thing twice. But it did create a sense of trust in our house and a sense of truthfulness. And that was a great way to encourage truthfulness.
And did you use that concept in with your own children?
Absolutely. And also the same concept of always explaining to my kids why I had been angered. And so, you know, what I did was adopt the things I appreciated about the way I was raised, and I implemented those in my children's lives. And then I also excluded the things that I thought were detrimental to my upbringing.
How about getting children to share in the responsibilities? I heard in your negotiation with your own parents that you offered to take out the garbage, you offered to do several things, and they said, this is already your responsibility.
Yeah.
And I want to share with you that in my own situation, we raised 4 children, now all grown, but I remember being in the laundry room, and I was doing the laundry for 4 children and my husband and myself. And I said, what am I doing? These kids are grown. I mean, they're not grown up. They're in their teens, 13, 11, whatever. And I spoke to my husband, and we had a meeting. We called a meeting with all the kids. And I said, look, you know, you're really all grown up now. I'm willing to do dad and my laundry and our linens and things. It's going to be your responsibility to take care of your own laundry, and how you want to divide that up is going to be your responsibility. You can do it alone, you do your own, you can share. That's going to be your, and that's what happened.
Well, I think that, you know, dropping things in their lap that have typically been services performed by the parents is a very good way to teach them exactly what it takes to get through life. Typically, our children started doing their own laundry when they went away to college, and then when they come home from college, it's no longer our problem. And that's how it's worked. You know, like you, we took care of our kids while they were in the house and as they went through high school. But they understood that there was this quid pro quo, which was, we're taking care of them. And as a result of that, they are obliged to behave in a manner that is acceptable to us. That we always taught them to be grateful for the things we did for them. They were grateful that we would drive them places. They always expressed their gratitude. If we took them to dinner somewhere, they would always say thank you. And we felt that sense of obligation to us and gratitude was a very valuable thing. And when especially they became more grateful when they realized what doing their laundry was about and having to go to the, you know, college medical center, and suddenly all that cushiness that is having a parent who's caring about you and making you meals and talking to you about what's going on goes away, and they come home recognizing how lucky they have been to grow up in a family that is loving and caring.
You mentioned also that that we need to help our youngsters by teaching all things. What do you mean by that, Richard?
Everything we do as a parent is teaching our child a lesson. If we're on the telephone and we're telling a white lie and they know it, we're teaching them that it's okay to lie. If we yell at somebody who's working around the house, like we go outside and we scream at our neighbor because their garbage cans, you know, were 1 foot on our property, we're teaching our child how not to live peacefully with their neighbor. And so it's almost as though, you know, there are these mini recording devices. And we know parents who you'll be with them and their child, and they'll talk about their child in the third person within earshot of their child, and they'll say things about their child that are just like, oh, well, he's really lazy. He won't do that. And that kind of sort of sideways lesson is completely terrible for a child. And I think that you have to be aware that as a teacher, you're always setting that example. You're always making the rules. All those things that precede the T in SMART, you know, set an example, make the rules, apply the rules, respect yourself, and teach in all things, those setting an example, making rules, all of that leads up to the fact that your job is to teach. And teaching your children means that you have to think of yourself as a classroom teacher who's in control of the room, who knows when the recesses are, who gives out grades, who responds to children's performance, and guides them through their lives. So everything we do is part of what we teach.
How can my listeners get in touch with you, Richard Greenberg?
I can be found at www.commonsensedad.com, and that's, I'm Common Sense Dad on Facebook, Common Sense Dad on Twitter and Instagram, and all social media.
Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Neil Heaver, producer. See you all on the radio next Monday evening at 6:30 p.m. when I again invite you to take charge of your life on WDIY.